ॐ पार्थाय प्रतिपूजितां भगवता नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेन कथितां पुराणमुनिना मध्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणीं भगवतीं अष्टादशाध्यायिनीम् अम्बत्वामनुसन्धतामि भगवद्गीते भवद्वैषिणी।
श्रीधीर्गुणमयैर्भावैः एतत् सर्वमिदं जगत्
मोहितं नापि जानाति, मोहितं न चित्ति जानाति, मामेभ्यः परम् अव्ययम्। त्रिभिः गुणमयैः गुणमयैः भावैः एभिः सर्वम् इदं जगत् मोहितं न अभिजानाति, माम् एभ्यः परम् अव्ययम्। Tastribihi gunamayahi bhavaihi, all instrumental singular. Ebihi sarvam idam jagat. Sarvam idam jagat means this entire world. So really referring, because of the context, when you say this entire world, you could mean even the inert objects. But they mean the entire, all humans, all of the pranis, you'll see why in a minute, because they're talking about ajnan, so they're not going to be talking about an object. So all the living beings, all of the human beings, sarvam idam jagat. Jagat means world though, idam jagat, this world. Sarvam, this whole world, this entire world. So it means all of the living beings, all of the humans who are having this dilemma, who need knowledge, okay? So all of these human beings, by these mohitam, are deluded by these, by what? By these three gunas. By the bhavas, by all of the things and all of the emotions, all of the things that have come into being. A bhava can be an emotion. Can also bhava, it comes from the root bhu. Bhu means to be, to become. So bhava is something that has become. So anything in the maya, anything that has come into being is a bhava. So here, tribihi gunamayahi bhavahi. By the three gunas, by this maya, right, which is gunamayi, which is, gunamayi means maya. Gunamayi means composed of the three gunas, made of the three gunas. So maya, which is composed of sattva, rajas, and tamas. Okay? So by these three gunas, by these bhavas, by all of these emotions, all of these raga dveshas, all of these likes and dislikes, all of these delusions that we have, all of these sattva, rajas, and tamas, all of the different aspects of sattva, rajas, and tamas, this entire world deluded, mohitam, deluded by these gunas, sattva, rajas, and tamas, and all of their modifications, all of their vikaras. Sattva, rajas, and tamas, the maya projects the sattva, rajas, and tamas, every aspect of it, including our sense organs and our mind, and there's the sattva aspect of the mind, the rajas aspect of the mind, the tamas aspect of the mind, and all of the forms that we experience in the world. So all of the beings being deluded by these projections of the sattva, rajas, and tamas, na abhijanati mam. They don't know me. They cannot know me. In fact, they don't know me. It says, who am Abhyaha Param Avyayam? Who am beyond them? Other than them. Param Abhyaha means from them. Param, beyond them, separate from them, different from them. Say different from them. And who am Avyayam? Now, Avyayam, Navyeti, Avyayam. Navyeti means that which does not veer off from its nature. So avyayam means that which actually doesn't go through any modification, which by its nature is changeless. And Shankara, in his Bhasha, he uses for this avyayam, he says the shed bhava vikaras. The shed bhava vikaras are the modifications that any living being goes through. It's called shed means six. Bhava vikara, vikara means a modification. So the shed bhava vikaras are the sixfold modifications that any organism will go through. Those modifications, sometimes we memorize them, actually they're jayate. That's the first one, jayate. First on any organized, any being, it's born. Asti, it's born, now it exists. Vardhate, so jayate, asti, it's born, now it's coming to being, it exists. Vardhate, it increases, it grows. Can you imagine a child? Child is born, right? And now it is, we've got the baby. Now the baby grows up, vardhate. Then vipadinamate, it goes through puberty and through transformation. Okay? Then apakshiyate, it starts to decline. And then vinashyati, it dies. So these are the sixfold modifications. Jayate, born, asti, is, vardhate, grows, vipadinamate, transfers through transformation, apakshiyate, it declines, ages, becomes sick, old, and then vinashyati, it dies. This is what everything in the creation, every living organism goes through, the sixfold. It's called the shed bhava vikaras. Vyeti means for something. The vyeti means something starts in one way, its nature is one way, and it veers from that. It changes from that. What is na vyeti, it never veers from its nature. It never loses its nature. It never degenerates in any way. It never moves away from its nature. So it means changeless. So nothing in the Maya is changeless. Everything in Maya is going through this process of modification. Every living being, every human being goes through these shed bhava vikaras. The Atma is because abhi param, it's other than this. It's different than this. It's because of avyayam, it doesn't go through any type of modification. So here, what is being said is that this entire world, all beings in the world, and it's an important thing to understand, all beings except for who? The jnani. So any being, any human being that is born within this Maya is going to suffer from this problem. They are going to be deluded just by nature by these three gunas. Deluded by these three gunas, they don't know me. Who am other than the three gunas? Right? And avyayam, changeless. And so here's the situation. You don't know yourself. The Atma, which is avyayam, is your being. But your being has not been differentiated by the mind, which enjoys you. This is the whole satyam mitya, where the Atma, the self that you are, is the mind. There's no separation. You know, the mind has no separation from yourself. The body has no separation from yourself. Sense organs has no separation from yourself. In fact, there is no experience in the entire creation that has any distance or separation from your being. Your being, the Atma, the conscious being that you are, is the very self of all of your experience. You have no experience. Just think about it. In all of your experience, you have no. There could be no experience without you. You're the very conscious being because of whom all of these experiences are. You're the existence, in fact, is set because of which all of these experiences are. And so, but this being, because the mind, your mind, enjoys it totally. In fact, your mind never has an emotion, never has a thought, never has any type of knowledge at all, which is separate from yourself. Okay? And so why wouldn't the mind think that I am that? Because it's never not been that. In fact, it is that. That's the thing. That's the problem. The mind is that. The body is that. The problem here is that the self is not the mind. It's not the body. The mind is the self. The self is not the mind. The body is the self. The self is not the body. This is what the whole satya mitya. This is exactly what satya mitya is. This is what the problem is. Is that I am the truth of all of this, and so of course all of this, anybody that has a mind will only think I am that, because in fact it is that. See what I mean? It is that. And so it's not thinking incorrectly in a sense. It's half true. What it doesn't realize, it realizes I am that. I am the conscious being. But it doesn't realize that the conscious being is free of it. It is not free of the conscious being. It is the conscious being, but the conscious being is not it. Because the conscious being that you are never goes through any type of change or any type of modification. But the problem is that the one who's making these decisions about who I am is itself a product of Maya. Right? The subject object, like here I am a body, mind, sense organs, human being, different from you, different from you, different from you, different from the whole. And everything about me in terms of the person that is capable of gaining any type of knowledge, having any type of experience, is made of the very Maya, right? Which I'm experiencing. Both the subject and the object are made of the same material, the same Maya, right? And so I'm totally, not only am I deluded by the whole Maya, I am the Maya which brings about that delusion. There's a built-in ignorance there. When I say deluded by Maya, Bhagavan says deluded by Maya, they don't recognize me. First of all, the body, mind, sense organs is a product of Maya, and all it can know is the Maya. It doesn't have any means of knowledge for recognizing the self, the truth of the Maya, which is the very truth of both the subject and the object. Dream, understanding dream is a good, it's very helpful here, because when you project a dream or project an imagination, the subject and object is included in the imagination. So if I say imagine a meadow and put yourself in the meadow, right, both you, the subject, and the object, you're walking through the meadow, you, the subject, and the object, meadow, are both part of the same imagination, and they're made of the same material. Right? It's not like the person in the meadow is made of a different material or a different order of reality than the meadow itself. So the subject and object are both Maya. They're both equally Maya. They're both equally objects. They're both equally part of the scene. Right? It's not like the individual in the setting is something of a higher or different order of reality. Not at all. It's of the same order of reality. And we can easily think, like when I'm imagining a meadow or if I have a dream, I see that the body that I've taken, that I have in that dream, is part of the picture. It's part of, made of the same material. You know? But how is that person in the dream, or that person sitting here in this room, what means of knowledge is there to differentiate the conscious substratum, which is the self of the whole thing? How to differentiate that? Because your sense organs and your mind are only allowing you to participate in the scene. Everything about this Maya Upadhi is helping you to participate in the scene, not to recognize the self, your being, which is the consciousness, not just of the body in the meadow, or the body in the dream, or the body in this room, but it's the self of the whole scene. And the self of the whole scene doesn't belong to any part of the scene. Just think about when you, if I ask you to think of a meadow right now, you think of a meadow, you've just projected a time, space, and scene. The time and space belongs to the scene, right? The dimension, you know, the depth, the time, the space, everything comes with that imagination. Here too, here we've got depth, we've got space, we've got time, the depth, the dimension, space, time, all of the objects, it all belongs to the scene. Whether it's an imaginary scene, whether it's a dream scene, whether it's Ishwara's scene, it belongs to the Maya. It doesn't belong to the Atma. Right? When you withdraw the scene, like if I would ask you to withdraw the meadow, the time and the space, the duality, the dimension are withdrawn. They don't have anything to do with awareness. Dimension doesn't have anything to do with awareness. Dimension has to do with Maya. You know? And so now this dimension has projected. We're in this three-dimensional world. And so there's more dimensions than that scientifically. All kinds of different dimensions, but all of those dimensions, this three-dimensional world that we easily experience, all of this is part of the Maya projection, and here we are, jivas within it, and we're looking around experiencing this dimensional reality, you know, because we're part of that projection. Now within this we have to, what means of knowledge do we have to recognize the self, the underpinning, the being from which this projection comes? If I ask you to imagine the meadow, the time-space dimension of the meadow comes, that doesn't, when it comes and it resolves, it comes and it resolves. I am not a dimensional being. If you're thinking Advaita, just consciousness, it has nothing to do with dimension, it has to do with one without a second. It's not big, it's not small. It's not tall, it's not yellow or black or white. It's just pure being, pure me. That pure me that, like in the meditation, when you just quieten everything down, what you're doing, it's been like with a Sankhya and yoga, what we do is quiet down the prakriti. You're quietening from the standpoint of your upadhi, from your body, mind, sense organs, you're quietening it down. Because it's usually tumultuous, it's usually so engaged within the Maya. It's lost out here within the Maya, concerned about this, and needing to get this done, needing to get that done, no, what about this, and what about that? It's all totally, totally engaged. And so in contemplation, one of the things we're doing is just relaxing. Invoking that inner friend, giving the body a moment to just totally relax so it doesn't have any pain. We're letting the mind have some free time to run. We're doing or going through our laundry list. We're talking to the inner child, just to bringing in that kind of a loving environment, just to let everything calm down. Just we're calming down the Maya, and then as we calm down the Maya, so that it's in a state of Shanti, then, because there's nothing competing then, we can just recognize the simplicity of the Atma, of yourself, you know, which, if you let the mind kind of recognize what is actually there in terms of your own being, and you ask yourself, is it big, is it small, what dimension is it, is it spatial? None of these words apply. It's not big, it's not small, it's not a question of dimension. It's only me. It's only my very simple presence. And what is that presence? It's wholeness. It's a completeness. It's an infinite depth, an infinite strength. These are just words. The words are pointing to help you land on that simple self that is you. That self is Brahman. That is Ishwara. That self is the center from which the entire projection comes. It's not just located in this body. This body, this room, this universe has for its being this very simple self. And so when we recognize that, I recognize I am Ishwara, not the body, mind, sense organs. Body, mind, sense organs are part of Ishwara. It's part of the dimension, it exists within Maya. But this very simple, simple presence that is me, it is this that is Ishwara also. Ishwara is not just you're not talking about the Maya Upadhi when you're talking about Ishwara. You're talking about the conscious being, Brahman, the Ishwara, who is the very self of this Maya, of the whole Upadhi. When you think, like if you have the, I ask you to imagine a meadow, you are Ishwara in reference to the meadow. Right? Because it is the self, from the self plus Maya, this meadow comes. And the whole meadow is your manifestation. Now, in that meadow, there's a lot of jivas. If you're walking around in the meadow and all of your friends are walking around, and there's birds and animals and trees and grass. But you, there's a universe, a jagat. It's a jagat. The meadow is the jagat. It's the universe with all of the beings. Right? Those are the jivas. The beings are the jivas. The meadow is the jagat. It's the universe. And so you can identify with a being and then look. You know, the beings are looking at the universe from within it. Ishwara is the whole, right? The one from whom the whole universe is in my knowledge, is my manifest knowledge, the entire universe. That's Ishwara. So in reference to the meadow, you are Ishwara, right? Because the meadow is the whole manifest knowledge. But all of the jivas are the birds and the plants and the animals and the humans that are walking into the jivas. So the jivas have to recognize I am the whole. How do they recognize I am the whole? The bird's not the whole. You know, the fox isn't the whole. The tree isn't the whole. The individuals aren't the whole. They're all part of Ishwara. But they are part of the whole, and I am the self of the whole. And so any self or being that they enjoy is only me. Just like any self or being that the whole enjoys is only me. That whatever self or consciousness that any being within the whole enjoys, it is only me. So I'm Ishwara, I'm the jiva. I can say that I am the jiva. I'm the self of every jiva. I'm the self of every animal, which is a jiva. I'm the self of every human. I'm the self of every plant. I'm the self of the whole. I'm the jiva, I'm Ishwara. Or you can say, which is what you can say, I'm the jiva. I'm the self abiding in the jiva. I'm the self abiding in Ishwara. Or I can say, there's many different ways we can say it. It's all saying the same thing. The jiva, the individual, in the meadow, in the universe, the jiva is part and parcel of Ishwara. There is no jiva that's separate from Ishwara. We think we're separate, but really every jiva is just, you know, it's like a cell in the body. It's a part of a greater whole. Right? Now, who am I? Well, I'm the self, which is the truth of the jiva and the truth of Ishwara. And so I, in fact, am the whole. Because what you say in reference to the meadow, are you the individual in the meadow or are you the meadow? What are you going to say? I would say, I am the self. Well, I am the truth of the meadow. I am the truth of the individual. I am the truth of the meadow. I am the one from whom the meadow comes. The meadow is my Maya. That Maya, or that which allows for the manifestation of the meadow, that is my Maya. So Krishna is talking now. That is my Maya. Right? In the previous verses, that's what he's been saying. This is my Maya. And who else's Maya is it? There is nothing else. There's nothing else, you know, beyond the set chit of the self. And this Maya doesn't exist anyplace else. And with the manifestation of this Maya is the manifestation of absolute knowledge. So say, this is Maya. This is my Maya. Yeah. This Maya projects. It resolves. And there's a difference between I am itself, but I am free of it. It has no being apart from me, but I am its very self. This is the truth of it. But the problem is that it is this Maya also causes the delusion, moha, for all of the jivas that are within this manifest knowledge, this total projection. It's just the way of it. You know, it's the way of it. You know? And so this is the problem. And this is the problem that needs to be solved. You need to now, and this is what Krishna says to Arjuna now at the beginning of this, I will teach you all of this. I will teach you so that you'll have vignanam, not just jnanam, not just understanding what the Veda says. You'll have that jnanam also, but you'll have the jnanam. You'll see as I see. You'll have the knowledge that I have. You'll have the recognition that I have. That's what he promises to Arjuna, and now he's beginning to explain what the problem is. So now he goes on and says, Daivi hesha gunamayi mama maya dirachaya mama maya dirachaya mame vaye prapadyante mame vaye prapadyante maya me tantarantite maya me tantarantite Daivi hi esha gunamayi mama maya durachaya durachaya, if I'm going to break it, durachaya mam eva ye prapadyante mayam etam taranti te daivi means that which belongs to the deva, that which belongs to Ishwara, okay? Belonging of Ishwara, born of Ishwara, Daivi, born of the Lord. Esha, this, he means here because Esha, this, Gunamayi, which is made of the gunas, three gunas, sattva, rajas, and tamas, mama maya, my maya, mama my maya, which is Gunamayi, made of the sattva, rajas, and tamas, the three gunas, which is Daivi, which is born of Ishwara, belongs to Ishwara, belongs to the very nature of Ishwara, the very Swabhava in the Bhasha. What Shankara says for Daivi, he says, Devasya, Daivi means Devasya, it means of the Lord, of the Effulgent One. What does that mean? Of me. Who's me? Ishwara. Mama Ishwara, of Ishwara. Who's Ishwara? Vishnu. Of Vishnu. Vishnu means the one who is sustaining this whole projection. Of Vishnu. What is it? Swabhava Bhuta. That which is my own nature. Means my nature in terms of the Maya Upadi. Okay? Instead of Swarupa. Swarupa is the Satchitananda. Swabhava is the way I project the Maya Upadi. Okay? So he says, this Maya, my Maya, which is made of these three gunas, is durachaya, very difficult to cross. It's not easy to cross. Durachaya. Mam eva ye prapadyante. He says, those who, ye means those who, prapadyante, surrender to me, are devoted to me. Surrender to me, it means have taken me as their refuge. I am the one who they seek. So mam eva. Those who have surrendered to me alone, means to Ishwara, they're seeking, means the mukshu, they're seeking me alone, not me and a bunch of other things. Right? Because if you're seeking, those who are seeking me alone, not me, and then some objects in the world also, let me have Bhagawan, let me have this and this and this also, then you're trapped in the Maya again. So those mukshus really who have recognized this problem, means they're seeking me alone, mam eva, right? Mam means me, mam eva. Ye prapadyante, those who have surrendered to me alone, mayam etam tarantite, they cross this maya. It is they who cross this maya. Those who have surrendered to me alone. So, those who have taken refuge in me alone. Because this maya, so let's look at the problem though. He says this maya, made of the sattva, rajas, and tamas, which accounts for, if we remember when we go through this panchikaranam of the sattva, rajas, and tamas accounts for all, it accounts for duality. All experience within duality is what's caused by the projection of this maya. It says this maya, which is my maya, this maya is durachaya, it's very difficult to cross over. Right? Because, in fact, there is no crossing over from within it.
Right.
As long as you're within time and space, there's no crossing over. You're just going to another side of Maya. Even if you're going to one of the heaven worlds or hell worlds, or you're transmigrating into one, you know, you're going to one loka after another loka after another loka, ending up back here, you're still within Maya. You're still within duality. You're still a jiva in the meadow. Right? And so there's no getting out of Maya. You can get into better situations, even dharma adharma. By following dharma, you can get into better situations, situations in which there is less dukkha. You know? But you're still within duality, and you have to maintain that. You have to maintain that dharma. If you slip up a little bit, then you get some dukkha. So you're within a world of, you're within a world of duality, a world of change. There's no escaping it from within the box. So there's no crossing over Maya from within the box. And where's the box? Everything that exists within time and space. Everything that exists within duality. So then, how to get out? Well, you can't get out. Anything that is in it cannot get out of it. And then let's look at it. This body, this, for instance, this physical body is within Maya. Right? It's within duality. It's subject to the Shadbhava Vikaras. It's subject to modification. It's subject to change. This is Maya. Right? What about the sense organs? That also Maya. They exist within duality. They're subject to change. What about the mind? Definitely Maya. Subject to continual change, thoughts coming and going. What about the buddhi? Definitely Maya. What about the ahankara, the I notion? Maya. What about the heaven worlds? Maya. Duality. What about the hell worlds? Maya. What about this world? Maya. What about time and space? Maya. So where is there, for anything about this upadhi, where is there any crossing over? Any crossing over is still within duality, right? So how do you get out of this? If in your mind you think that there's a solution, that there's a somewhere to go here, some solution within the Maya, then it becomes duratsya. You can't cross it. There's only one way to cross it, and that is through me. And how can you cross it through me? Bhagavan, Ishwara is talking. How can you cross that Maya? It's only if you surrender to me. Means you recognize this problem. Surrender, take refuge in me is maybe a better way to say it. Surrender is a Western word that's loaded. You seek refuge in me. Mm-hmm. Why? Because I, the Atma, the Self, is the only thing that there is that is free of Maya. And how, in what do I recognize in seeking, what will you recognize in seeking refuge in me? What is it that Krishna has to teach him about who he is, who you are? Is it this very self, the very self that I am, the Vivarta Upadana Karana from before, in the few verses before, that material cause of the creation that doesn't go through any change? I am the Jiva Bhutam, he says. I am the one, I am the very self of the Jiva. This, I am the one who is your very self. And so the one who seeks refuge in me, you know, that one will cross over Maya. Because I am the one who is free of the Maya. And how can the jiva, this is where the whole Mahabhakya comes in, how can the jiva, by being devoted, by being seeking refuge in Ishwara, cross over the Maya? Mm-hmm. It's only through recognizing I am Ishwara. And that's how the jiva will cross over. The recognizing that the self of Ishwara is myself. That self that is, has crossed over the Maya, that self that is free of the Maya, is myself. That's a big thing to recognize. First you have to recognize that there is a self that is free of Maya. That's a huge recognition. But if you were to recognize that there is a self free of Maya, then that self has to be the self of Ishwara. Because that self can't belong to anything within Maya. If your self belongs to anything within Maya, then it's limited by the Maya. Say you're like this. If your self, the conscious being that you are, belongs to this body, like this body has me for itself, but what if my self is dependent on this body? Then there's no possibility of crossing over Maya. What if I'm the jiva? Means I'm the one that transmigrates. Myself, by the jiva, the transmigrating soul, you know, the me that transmigrates, takes body after body, that me is totally dependent on the conscious being, the self. But the self that I am is that soul. If the self that I am is that soul and yourself is that transmigrating soul, then there's no crossing over Maya. I am a product of Maya. That's who I am. That's the problem of the jiva. The jiva believes I am a product of Maya. I am this body, mind, sense organs. I am different from you. That's me. That's who I am. And I am bound by time, bound by space, subject to dharma, adharma. That is myself. And as, from that standpoint, there is no crossing over because you are it. You are the Maya, right? You're contained within the Maya. Now, to recognize myself as free from Maya, right, which is very difficult to cross, that is a huge recognition. Because if I am free from Maya, if I'm free from the Maya, then I'm free from the whole universe. I'm free from the body, I'm free from the sense organs, I'm free from the ahankara, I'm free from everything that I perceive. And who is that self? That self is infinite. That self can't be separate from Ishvara. And so, here, it is those who seek, take refuge in me. And another way of looking at this also, as Ishvara speaking now, I am the only one that can free you from this Maya. Who else can free you from the Maya? Can somebody from within the Maya free you from the Maya? The only one that can free you from the Maya is Ishvara. Because Ishvara is the only one that is free from the Maya. And the only way that Ishvara can free you from the Maya is to make you recognize that you are me. That you are Ishvara. Otherwise, you are an object in the Maya. You see that? Mm-hmm. So it's actually, it's very beautiful what he's saying. Those that take refuge in me, they can cross. Why? Because it's me that is the only thing that is free from the Maya. So. Let's do this next verse because it's short. Namam dushkritino mudhaha. Namam dushkritino mudhaha. Prapadyante naratamaha. Prapadyante naratamaha. Mayaya. Pahatajnanaha Mayaya Pahatajnanaha Asuram Pavamashvitaha Asuram Pavamashvitaha Namam Dushkritanaha Mudaha Prapadyante Nara Adamaha Mayaya Pahatajnanaha Asuram Pavamashvitaha. He says, Mom, not me. Dushkritinaha mudaha. Those people who are deluded, who are dushkritinaha, who don't follow dharma, means they do bad actions. People who are themselves are deluded. And also they are adharmic. They don't follow dharma. Their actions, they do wrong things, bad things. They're do adharma. Those people, Neta Adamaha, who are the lowest among the humans. They're the lowest among the humans because they have no respect for Dharma. They don't follow the Dharma. Those people, being deluded and with the Adharma, Namam Prapadyante, they don't take refuge in me. In fact, they take refuge with their seeking. All of their seeking is only for happiness and pleasure in the world, through, as Shankar will say, through the senses. They don't take any refuge or recognition of me at all. So those people, they being deluded, they don't take refuge in me. Mayaya apahata jnanaha. Their jnanaha is their viveka, their knowledge, their viveka has been robbed, has been carried away. Their viveka means their ability to discriminate. It's been taken away by, it's been robbed away by the Maya, by the power of Maya. And those people, asuram bhavam ashritaha, they resort to a bhava, a state of being which is the asuric, the asura. The asura, you know, there's the devas, sattva, the rakshasas, the demon types who are mostly are rajasic, and then the asuras, mostly tamas, you know. Asuras are, the asuras are those slothful people who don't have anything going on for themselves other than what they can consume. And that's all that they have for their satisfaction is what they can consume in the world. There's no introspection, basically. That's the people who have no introspection. And so those type of people, so because there's no, you have to, the, actually I think it's important to understand that here with dharma, adharma. Dharma allows for shanti in the mind. Shanti is like a clear water bucket reflecting the sun. So a mind that has shanti has some tejas. It means there's a presence, the presence of your being, the sanctity of your being, the sanctity of your being is something that the mind can experience. It reflects in the mind, like the sanctity, like the brilliance of the sun, the tejas of the sun, reflects in a mind that is like a clear water bucket. And so a dharmic mind has some deep peace, right? And so that will bring about a certain introspection, which is considered punya, actually. A mind that is adharmic, or doing things that are against the dharma, doing things that are, where the choices that you make have nothing to do with dharma, they have only to do with your own pleasure. That type of mind is kind of like a muddy water bucket reflecting the sun, where there's no sense of presence there. That's the dullness, that's the tamas. And so there's nothing there except trying to, you know, eat your way through sense conception for some sort of pleasure. But there's no shanti there, there's no peace there. So that becomes an asuric life. It's a very tamas. Remember also, this physical world is made of the tamas aspect of all of the five elements that have gone through Panchakarma. Right? If we have sattva, rajas, and tamas, the sattva is your mind and your sense organs. The rajas is the organs of action and the pranas. The physical body is made of the tamas aspect of all of the five elements that have gone through this process of grossification. That's for the individual. Whole universe also has gone through this, physical universe has gone through this process of grossification, all tamas. And so your mind, and for this an asura, your mind and sense organs are only engaged in tamas. Right? This is what you're using to get any type of food, so to speak. And so what he's saying here is those people who, because of the adharma, bad actions, that they're, for them, those deluded, everybody's deluded, but here there's delusion plus, you know, plus adharma. Those people, I'm not there for those people to take refuge in their own mind. I'm not one who they take any type of refuge in. And them, their mind totally covered, their viveka totally covered by this maya, they resort to the existence of the asura, which is just an existence of dullness, of tamas. There's no sense of sanctity inside, no sense of bhagavan inside. So that's the verse. So isn't that a nice verse to leave you with? But the next few verses are very, very famous verses, and I want to do it as a set. It's where Bhagavan says, you know, there are four types of people who are devoted to me. There's four types of devotees. You know, people who do recognize me. There's these types, the lowest type, that don't recognize me at all. There are four different types that do recognize me. He lists those types and then he talks about them for three verses. So we'll do that next week. Purnamidam Purnat Purnamadachate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Guru Pyo Namaha Hari Om.
Very interesting to me that when the pramana is in operation, it's like stepping into a wonderland, and then when it stops, you come back out of that wonderland.
Oh.
No, but it is, it's a release or a,
It is.
Yeah.
It is because your mind sits in the vision.
And it's changeless. Mm-hmm. And that refuge is there.
The refuge is there.
That's the wonder.
So on the pragmatic level, if you kind of operate out of these senses, I mean, we use them like non-stop, right? It just feels like such a hardcore endeavor. I mean, it's like, philosophically, it makes total sense, right? But it kind of feels just like, and I just like to explore that, where the missing link is, you know. It kind of makes me feel like just using the senses is just not a possible thing. I mean, it's like to stay, all you have to stay in this dual consciousness, which on one hand allows for the experience of duality that's reinforced to time and space phenomena that gets channeled through the senses and so on, and so we have that experience all the time. And then at the same time I'm also recognizing I'm not that. And maybe this is, it's possible to simultaneously experience both. I don't know. It seems more like I'm moving from one to the other, you know, back and forth. One moment I'm in unity consciousness and my next moment I'm duality consciousness. I'm just wondering, that seems like somehow kind of unresolved and not, you know, there's something still that's, there's something missing that's bringing that together, you know, into a deeper kind of anchor in itself, what we were just talking about. Do you know what I mean?
Well, both are simultaneously present, because really there's only one thing present in terms of substance. Right. Like if you just think of the waves, ocean, there's water presence at the same time that there's all of the form. There's no distance.
Right.
But there's a viveka necessary to recognize that which is changelessly present and the very self of that which is changing. And so that is something that you need to recognize. And that, but once that, if, when that recognition is there, in fact, it's always there. It doesn't, is not disturbed by all of the activity. It's like, I like the bas relief of the clay bas relief sculpture. Mm-hmm. It's very hard to get beyond the clay, no matter how much activity is going on, mm-hmm. for a person who's recognized the clay, right?
Yeah.
You can't get beyond the clay, even though there's a whole scene, active scene going on there, if we use our imagination for that. Mm-hmm. Here, it can be exactly like that in the sense that the sat-chit, your being, there's nothing away from it. It doesn't matter what's happening, but that isn't being disturbed. No matter what is happening, that isn't being disturbed, and you're awake to that. Now the thing is, what maybe causes the person to seemingly, temporarily not be awake to that, mm-hmm. is that our likes and dislikes and our needs in the world pull us away from that kind of recognition of Ishwara is what it is. It pulls us into kind of a more of a jiva reality. Yeah. I need this to be happy. And of course, that's true. But that is exactly why this karma yoga buddhi is so, so important, because you can't expect your mind to have matured in terms of vairagya immediately. It matures in its own time, but it matures with that karma yoga buddhi. Mm-hmm. You know, which allows the mind to initially, it just allows for all of those likes and dislikes and all of those needs, the lack of dispassion, I need this to be happy, I need that to be happy, all of these kind of feelings that are human and natural, for you to be able to have those, but at the same time have a relationship with Ishwara, mm-hmm. so that you pursue your desires, and at the same time you take the results of your actions as prasad from the Lord, so you're more and more relating to this world as Ishwara. See what I mean? With a karma yoga buddhi, you're at the same time trying to follow dharma. That's understood with the karma yoga buddhi. Following dharma. And you're accepting the results of your actions as prasad from the Lord. So you don't always get your way. But sometimes in the temple, you know, you only get some water. You don't get a whole meal. You just get water. It's still prasad. So you... With that buddhi, with that, but you are, your whole life then is in conversation with Ishwara. Even though you're negotiating all of these desires and things, you still have all of that, but it's still in relationship with Ishwara. Right, so that brings back that Ishwara buddhi. Then what happens is that Ishwara buddhi, am I using too much Sanskrit? The Ishwara buddhi, that state of, okay. No. Ishwara buddhi, that brings itself, because it's not removed from this knowledge. So that Ishwara buddhi brings itself a certain amount of shanti. Right? Because you're now in relationship to Ishwara, and that prasada buddhi is there. To the degree that you have this, some shanti, some peace, you'll find the vairagya, that dispassion, naturally increases because you're feeling whole. Mm. To the degree you have shanti, to that degree you feel some peace. When you are feeling peace or wholeness, or a certain all is well with me-ness, right? To that degree, your demand of the world increases. When you're feeling happy, then you don't have to have everybody else be behaving in this way and that way and this way and that way, because you're fine. So that gaining of relative shanti through that karma yoga buddhi, which brings about that relationship with Ishwara, you know, brings about peace, relative peace, that then in the light of your knowledge allows you to more and more and more let go of this demand on the creation to make you happy. We come in with, you know, total set of samskaras, tendencies that are based in ignorance. I need this to be happy. I need you to be like this to be happy. I need the world to be like this. And I need this much money. And I need this much stuff. It's endless. And so there's an unwinding that has to take place. That karma yoga buddhi allows for that unwinding in a way that allows the mind to gain nishtha in this knowledge in a very natural way. In one verse, Krishna says, you know, the person has the karma yoga buddhi, the shanti they enjoy is not different than the jnani shanti. Mm-hmm. And because it's Ishwara, you know, because you're not fighting with the creation, you're not fighting with Ishwara. And that's the reason, so the Shanti is there. For the Jnani, there's no Ahankara, the Kartritvam is gone.
I hear somebody.
What is it, Tibby?
Tibby, she's...
What?
What is it, Tibbs?
Shanti, Tibbs.
Come here.
That's Kim. Oh, little Tibby.
I kind of feel like that sets up a certain kind of withdrawal from... And I know that doesn't have to be that way.
A withdrawal?
Yeah, I kind of withdraw from the world a little bit. You know, like, it's just like... Because you're suddenly, you're not, I mean, what perpetuates the engagement with all the doing and the world seems to be the raga dvesha, you know.
Raga dvesha.
Yeah, and so once that's...
Well, that changes.
Right, yeah. And so that's the juice for this whole machine to just kind of go out there.
No, you know, we think it's the juice, but actually your prarabdha is the juice. And then on top of that, you have the raga dvesha juice, which is a really agitating one. But you've got the very juice of your prarabdha that takes you through your whole life. And so you actually will have, you know, preferences, likes and dislikes that go along with your life. It's not that everything just flattens out. You know, but you can have likes and dislikes, like, I like this, but... It's not, I need this to be happy. The desire template is, I want this so that I can be happy. For a jnani, it's, I want this and I don't want that. But this happiness is not at stake. There's preferences. But your preferences, if your preference isn't met, that's okay too. But it's not that you don't have preferences.
So you said the preference coming from your prarabdha karma, really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's actually a good differentiation. I like that.
Yeah, and so there's a lot of energy for your life. It's actually Ishwara's energy. But your life is not your life. It's all part of Ishwara. And so this life is being lived out, and there's a lot of energy to live out this life. In fact, we dampen down our energy with all of the likes and dislikes and confusions. And projections, you know, if my life were going to be any good, really, it would be like so-and-so's life.
So the Raga Dvesha become actually a distraction from living all prarabdha karma in the fullest sense.
Absolutely.
With the jnana on board at the same time.
Yeah, your Raga Dvesha can become a... If you Raga Dvesha in the terms of the whole desire template, I need this to be happy, I want this to be happy. The preferences don't make any difference, because if you don't get your way, that's all right too.
Well, I really sit in a very deep confusion here. I just went blank, and what I kept hearing was that there are the people who are dharmic, who do not seek Bhagavan at all. So I went into this whole Christian thing like, well, after not seeking Bhagavan, why would Bhagavan help them, or why would I want to be dharmic to those people then? I know, it's sick.
Why would you want to be dharmic?
Well, it's that Christian thing, you know, it's like the sinners, so let them go to hell or something like that. Why would I want to be dharmic to people who are not behaving dharmically?
Well, I can tell you a really selfish reason to answer that, which in the end there's the selfishness of that's actually a good selfishness. We're all selfish in a way. In the Buddha Dharmika, it says, you know, you love your child because of the happiness they bring you. And you love your wealth because of the happiness it brings you. You love your partner because the happiness goes on like that. And in fact, any type of a dharma on your part will bring unhappiness to you. And so this is the dilemma. Say there's a person who is a dharmic, causing a lot of pain, doing dark things, doing painful things. And so on your part, you think, if you were to think, well, this person doesn't deserve dharma on my part. It deserves a dharma. Now then what happens is you become an adharmi in your relationship to the adharmi. Okay? If you become an adharmi, then you suffer the darkness of the adharma. And so there is no relief in terms of you can't fight adharma with adharma. You can only fight adharma with dharma. Otherwise, you lose your own shanti.
Right, that's clear.
And so that's actually the challenge in life, is to be able to accommodate, even if we say we use the word adharma, to be able to accommodate people that are causing you pain as well as people who are giving you pleasure, so to speak.
So how is
every samsari can do is a like a great jnani in reference in relation to all of the people and situations that are giving me pleasure. And I can accommodate them all perfectly.
Yeah, there's no problem.
No problem.
No,
it's the shitheads.
Yeah. But there's all these problems. It's 50-50 and there's all kinds of challenging situations. People that are causing problems, situations that are painful or hurtful. And so how do I engage with those? That's in the Karma Yoga Buddhi, that's what we call kaushalam. That's a skill.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we learn how to be in a way where we can keep our shanti in that situation. And that shanti is kept by the way we relate in the situation.
Well, what do you do with a guy like Bernie Madoff, you know? I mean, you just...
Well, I mean, that's your problem, right? I mean, is old Bernie, you know, I'm sure he's caused a great deal of pain to many, many people.
Oh, a lot of
people.
Suffering, you know. Devastated people.
Yeah, but now this is the problem, though. Mm-hmm. That's true, poor Bernie has caused you.
And that's also the story.
Yeah, but the people that have been caused pain, that's a learning situation for those people. And say if I was a victim of Bernie, having that financial loss would not be a happy situation.
Stripped of everything.
Yeah, okay, but now see, you're getting into
yeah.
a victim. You're getting into a victim.
Well, no, talk to me.
Okay, so you've lost all of that. That's an unhappy situation. How are you going to handle that? Are you going to become, you know, a miserable victim, or is your knowledge going to play a part? Because there's all kinds of dukkha. You're not going to, nobody's going to get, Bernie's a big example, but nobody's going to get through life without being in painful situations. That's not how it is. It's 50-50.
Yeah.
How are you going to hold that painful situation? Is it, I need this to be happy? That's the samsara template, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or when that samsara template is, I need this to be happy, rises up, then that's the red flag for the sadhana.
Or the...
For bringing your knowledge in.
I need this to be secure.
Same. The same. I need this to be
safe.
Secure. It's the same. Why do you need to be safe?
Well,
so you can be happy. So you can relax. I need to be secure so I can be happy, so that I can relax. I need this, and I need that, so that I can, you know, be happy. It all melts down to that.
The samsari template, I like that.
Yeah, the samsari template. Well, that's why Bhagavan says, you know, this my Maya, believe me, because it's really hard. It's hard to get beyond.
Oh.
It's not easy. You know, you can only get beyond it with knowledge.
And vigilance also.
Yeah, it takes viveka and vairagya, you know, this viveka, vairagya, the shama, dhamma, paritiksha, all these qualities, the mumukshitva, they're not kidding.
No, they're not.
No, those, and those all have to mature and develop in you. But if you didn't have any viveka, discrimination or dispassion, viveka or vairagya, you wouldn't have any interest in this knowledge at all. And because you have viveka and vairagya, you know, there's a mumukshutvam, because you've recognized the problem, then this knowledge is important to you.
Well,
but that doesn't mean that your mind is in every aspect ready to embrace it, because we have all kinds of baggage that we come with.
Well, Krishna here is saying that there's no way out.
Within samsara, there's no way out. Samsara, samsara. There is dharma that gives you, the dharma with the karma yoga buddhi also gives you relative shanti. Mm. But you can't get out without getting out. And how can you get out is to recognize the one who's out. That's the only way out. You're not going to get out within it. You have to get out by recognizing that which is free. And you are free. But you have to recognize yourself. You can't stay in this, you know, identification with Edward.
Or wanting safety.
Safety and what isn't safe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But even with your Paratha Kama, you can't get stuck with your Paratha Kama story either. I mean, it's like, it's also just a story. I mean, somebody might be completely, passionate about some kind of thing that is really not good, you know, from a dharmic perspective, mm-hmm. somebody is very passionate about something
mm-hmm.
that's totally adharmic, right? So that's their paraksa karma. Now they come across this knowledge and they realize that they are not what they thought they are, and they realize they recognize actually who they really are. But now they still have this corrupt, this perpetuated inclination to feel obsessed about this one thing in their life. So you were saying before, ultimately you need to that needs to come together, you know. But I'm just saying, not everybody has a moderate corrupted karma, or you know, or some kind of sane corrupted karma. It can also be very insane corrupted karma. Now, they need to clean that up in order for them to clean up their paraktha karma. I mean, in order even for them to apply this knowledge, what you're talking about, they have to really clean up their paraktha karma, because their paraktha karma won't even allow them for this drishti of this knowledge to even come through, you know what I mean?
Well, maybe if you're getting a little complex. If the karma is such
mm-hmm.
that there's no one inside who's a mumukshu.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's nothing in this life, and that mumukshutvam also is considered incredible punya.
Mm-hmm.
In this particular life, that punya is not really there.
Mm-hmm.
Because the person doesn't deserve that in this life. There's no part of that person that has that self-reflection, you know. If it arises, then that possibility is there. Right, but that arises, that self-reflection arises. They say that itself is from dharma. And in fact, lifetimes of dharma, it's considered to take a human birth is a huge punya. Then to actually have a buddhi, to have viveka, is an incredible punya. Then to have mumukshutvam on top of that, this is all rare. And so say you have all of these things, then what caused you to take this particular birth is also punya. And so you're not going to be having this type of dark container that's suitable to your, isn't suitable to the jiva.
Mm-hmm.
See, the jiva that is not just this body, it's the whole story that you find yourself in.
Mm-hmm.
And so say now you are somebody, you know, who has taken a birth, and that mumukshutvam is there. And yet, you know, because of your karmas, you also, you know, have this tendency and that tendency, and you're getting yourself into trouble in this way and that way. Those are all things that you have to work on. But they're not going to be something that is in the way of your gaining knowledge. Those are your sadhanas that you have to work with. Some are harder than others. You know, and some people come, say they come to this knowledge with less baggage than another person. And then you can say, Swamiji will say, so yeah, they come with less baggage and get to this knowledge earlier than another person, because they went through all of that garbage in their last life. You know? And then say a person, they don't come to this knowledge until they're old. say they're 60 years old, and now at 60 they come, they'll say, why did I come to this knowledge at 60? Well, because you got here at this time, whereas another person will have to be reborn and come to it at 20. You see what I mean?
So, that's what I did.
So, but then you could say, I wish I would have got it in my last life. You know, even if I was 60 years old, if I hadn't got it in my last life. So it comes with it.
You know, one time I heard Suzuki say something really funny. I think, you know, if you read some early books, he says things like, you come to this knowledge, and if you come to it young, how lucky you are, or something like that. And then I think I heard him sort of start to say that when he was addressing some people, and he said, when you come to it, when you're, and then he kind of looked out, and I think he realized, oh, everybody's kind of old now.
Yes. Well, the hair gets on fire when it gets on fire.
Yeah, and what difference does it make? Like, say you're 80 and you come to this knowledge, and then you die in 5 years, and you don't have that nishta. It's called ubhayavrishta. Then what happens? And then you take another birth, and then you get reconnected with your knowledge of how Krishna talks about it. You get reconnected with your knowledge with you're born into a dharmic family, and you get reconnected with your knowledge, and now you have your knowledge at 10 or 15 or 20. You meet your teacher, and everybody goes, oh, wow. You came to this knowledge at such a young age. And you have said, well, actually.
The question is, how long is the earth going to be around for us to reincarnate here? I guess there might be other places too.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, it doesn't look so good.
Well, Swamiji always says this thing about something about that a human being or the equivalent. I heard him in
a jiva, just the creation is beginningless and endless. Mm-hmm. And so are jivas. It is true that we're destroying this planet, maybe beyond any hope of saving it. We'll see what Ishwara does, but that's not going to bring an end to the universe or to the jivas, but we've not done well here for certain.
Well, this tape he said, or the equivalent, and he said it's always important to, and then he went on and said it's always important to add or the equivalent. So obviously he seemed to me he was trying to say that there is
with Bhuloka, all of the lokas where there can be a human birth.
Well, I got the feeling that the Veda, the Pramana really just popped out of India. I mean, it's...
that's
the location in the universe.
Destined.
Yeah.
What happened to them?
The connection worked. Oops. Anybody hear me? Wonder how long you've been without.
Nobody called.
Okay, good. Was there no connection for a while, Jagadish? You just noticed it.
So when you say, you guys the whole story, what do you actually mean by that?
Oh, what I meant was, only a short time. Okay, thanks. What I meant was that your prarabdha, you are part of your prarabdha. Mm-hmm. And so the life that surrounds you is also part of your prarabdha, not just your body.
Right, my parents and my...
Your parents and the people that are in your life and
everything.
Opportunities, everything, it's all part of the prarabdha.
And the adharmic people?
Yeah.
But it's interesting that you call it part of the jiva. I think she's
jiva. I meant the jiva story. The jiva story.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
The story surrounding the jiva.
The prarabdha. Yeah. The jiva and the story surrounding the jiva is the prarabdha. Let's stop.